really all that mattered. Doesn't matter what they worship, it's all pagan superstition. Satisfied with her appearance, Tamsin turned toward the door. Well, time to get to work. I can't wait until we have other people to do this for us. Most of the girls, like Tamsin, had been assigned to cooking the formidable feast that Mistress Masterson had planned. A few were in charge of games and music, and I was on decorating duty, along with Clara, of all people. She and I managed the task by splitting the rooms and staying out of each other's way. When it came time to decorate the drawing room, I was surprised to find Cedric and Mira talking inside. He'd made himself scarce during our exam days. "You're respectable today. Back to being a proper Adorian," I said. He'd been dressed that way at our first meeting, but often slipped into Ausfridian styles for informal occasions. His overcoat, made of a heavy blue fabric edged in gold, hung nearly to his knees, as opposed to the shorter ones more common here. His boots were also higher than those of continental fashion trends. He didn't just look proper. He looked dazzling. Not that I'd ever tell him.
"It's like you've been to finishing school."
"Well, some people might have trouble dressing themselves, but I never have," he said. "We'll be on our way in another month, so I figured I should look the part. My father and I need to be nearly, though not quite, as grand as the rest of you, if we're going to show we're legitimate brokers. It's all about image, or so my uncle says." In the months that had passed, I'd given little thought to Clara's malicious accusations about Cedric and Mira. Now, having walked in on the two of them talking, my curiosity was piqued.
"Are you distracting Mira from her tasks?"
I asked, keeping my tone light. Mira exchanged a knowing smile with him. "Cedric is explaining a game called Hex Bones to me. Mistress Masterson put me in charge of entertainment, but I don't know many Ausfridian games." "Hex Bones?" I asked incredulously. "That's just a dice game stable boys and messengers play." I bit off any other words as Cedric shot me a sharp look. "It's a game played by many people," he amended. "Most girls here grew up with it. The elite classes don't play it, true, and it's smart of you to be thinking ahead like that. But I'm sure for one night we can all relax a little." "Yes, of course," I said. It had been a while since I'd slipped like that. "But where are you going to get the dice? You think Mistress Masterson has a spare set?" "Oh, I think Nancy Masterson might be more of a rebel than we think." Although he still smiled, Cedric had an unusual air about him tonight. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but he seemed almost melancholy. Certainly not a mood I generally associated with him.
"Did you call for me?"
Mistress Masterson stuck her head in the doorway, having just been passing by at that moment.
No,
said Cedric. Mira and I tried not to laugh. Adelaide was just discussing her plans for the room, and was hoping you'd approve. Mistress Masterson looked at me expectantly, and I tried not to glare at Cedric for shifting the focus to me. Quickly I mustered a plan. Candles in all the windows, and those gilt-edged blue runners for the tables. And if I move that sofa over there, it'll open up that corner for conversation. It'd be nice to get some of that spiced incense, too. Mistress Masterson nodded in approval. "Sounds like you got it well in hand, dear." "And holly," I suddenly said, looking at the mantel. "We should have gotten holly to make bows. We always used to do that for winter parties in the capital."
"That would have been nice," Mistress Masterson agreed. "I didn't even think about it with everything going on. Too late to get any now. The sun's almost down."
She nodded toward a darkened window, and seeing my disappointed face, added, "Don't worry. Clara had the foresight to go get fresh ivy and make some garlands. That's almost as good." That only made things worse, knowing that Clara had one-upped me. Mistress Masterson left, and Mira gazed at the window for long moments before turning to Cedric.
"Weren't there some things you needed to take care of?"
"Yes. I should do that soon." When he made no motions to leave, Mira added, "You'll have plenty of time before the party. Everyone's very busy right now."
"Yes, yes."
His smile returned, but I could see a tightness behind it, reinforcing that odd sense I'd gotten from him. "I'll take care of that now." He started to walk out of the room and then paused by me. "Here." I smiled as he pressed a set of dice into my hand.
"Of course. Of course you have a set."
"It's my spare, actually," We play all the time at school.
Are you any good? I asked.
Never mind, I already know you are. It's a game that involves reading people and manipulating them.
Exactly, he said. You'd be a natural.
Despite that jest, he still seemed tense.
He's acting very strangely, I told Mira when he was gone. Is he?
I don't know him well enough to know.
Don't you?
I asked pointedly. Her face was completely innocent as she shook her head.
I'm sure everything's fine.
Do you want me to help you move the sofa before I leave? She and I lugged it across the room, both of us surprised at its weight.
I'm starting to agree with Tamsin, I said. It'll be nice to have flocks of servants to do this for us.
Mira grinned back.
We'll see.
I don't know if I did well enough to get a husband with one servant, let alone flocks.
Not like Tamsin, I said.
Not like Tamsin, she laughed. Her face grew serious. But I hope I did well enough to get, I don't know, a choice. Or at least someone I can respect.
Still want to buy out your contract?
She helped straighten the sofa.
I think Tamsin was right about that. I'd need some sort of job on the side. And I'm guessing that's not allowed.
Yeah, Jasper would probably frown on that kind of thing. But it won't matter. I know you'll have your pick of amazing men. And if you're worried about your scores, you can always retake the tests.
Right. They were so fun the last time.
She stepped back and joined me to survey our work with the sofa.
Do you need anything else before I go?
Not unless you can make some holly materialize, I said wistfully.
It just doesn't feel like winter without it.
I wouldn't know, since we don't have it in Serminica. But I think this room will be fine. After she left, her remark made me feel worse, as though I owed her holly for a true Osfridian experience. When I finished with the drawing room, Mistress Masterson released me from my duties early to go get ready for the party. Neither Tamsin nor Mira had returned yet. I put on my best dress, a full-skirted gown of sky-blue brocade scattered with pink flowers. A pink chemise was worn under it, peeping through the slashed sleeves and around the boned bodice. As I laced it up, I thought ahead to what it would be like when we switched to Adorian fashions. The skirts were slimmer and more maneuverable, the bodices less structured. I wandered downstairs looking for ways to help. No one needed me, and Cedric was gone. I'd kind of wanted to brag to him about having laced up the dress in under a minute. So I busied myself by going over my decorative handiwork, but found no flaws in it, except the absence of holly. A check of the clock told me I had an hour until dinner, and I made an impulsive decision. I traded my delicate party shoes for sturdy boots and donned a wool cloak. Even so, I wasn't prepared for the blast of cold that hit me when I went outside through one of the back doors. I questioned my decision for a moment, watching as my breath made frosty clouds, and then plunged forward. I knew what Mistress Masterson would have said about me traipsing alone through the woods at this time of day. My grandmother would have said the same thing. But I'd been all over Blue Springs property in my time here, taking walks and picnics with the other girls. No dangerous animals roamed the grounds, and we were too far out of the way to have any vagabonds coming by. The only person I was likely to see was the kindly old groundskeeper. It was the shortest day of the year, and sunset had come early. The light was almost gone from the western horizon, and the rest of the sky already glittered with stars. A rising moon and my own memory of the way to the holly trees made navigation easy. The cold was my biggest obstacle, and I regretted not bringing gloves. A thin coat of snow crunched softly as I passed over it. I found the holly trees where I remembered, on the farthest edge of the property. Here the grounds gave way to what was left of the wilder, original forest. Those who'd built Blue Spring long ago had cleared the trees around the house, replacing them with vast, manicured lawns and ornate specimen plantings. It was a common practice among fashionable estates, and these sorts of wild woods were becoming scarce. I'd had enough sense to bring a knife, and set to cutting off branches of holly. I wouldn't be able to fashion them into a true wreath, but I'd have enough to make some nice arrangements for the mantles that would certainly outdo Clara's ivy. I'd just about finished when I noticed something in my periphery. At first I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. I could see fairly well out here. The moon reflected off the snow, and stars spilled across the sky. Squinting at what had caught my eye, I wondered if I was seeing just another reflection. But no, this wasn't the pale, silvery light of moon and snow. This was warmer, the golden light of a flame. It was coming from even farther into the old woods, in a copse of hazel and oak. I crept forward to investigate. Most likely it was the groundskeeper. If not, and it was some trespasser, I could easily sneak away without being seen and report it. Again, I knew Mistress Masterson and my grandmother would have a lot to say about this reasoning, but I didn't care. Clutching my holly boughs and knife, I crept forward, keeping to the shadows and concealment of the trees. As I drew closer, I saw that there were actually 12 lights, tiny lanterns in the snow, arranged in a diamond formation in a clearing, canopied by the skeletal branches of ancient trees. Standing in the middle of the diamond, facing the most venerable of oaks, was a man in a billowing greatcoat that glowed scarlet in the lantern light. He knelt down, facing the diamond's eastern point, and bowed to it, murmuring something I couldn't make out. Then he knelt to the south and repeated the ritual. Terror filled the pit of my stomach as I realized what was happening. I dismissed Tamsin's joking comments about Alanzans and midwinter. But here, before my very eyes, was one of those heretics, conducting some arcane ritual in the night. I might not know as much about them as Mira, but I'd learned enough from whispered conversations in Osfro to know that the diamond made of 12 points was sacred to the Alanzans. It represented the 12 angels, 6 light and 6 dark. A heretic is using our lands! I needed to get back and report it. Quietly, I started to retreat. Just as he turned toward the northern point, facing me, it illuminated his face, revealing features I knew. Features I'd seen less than an hour ago. Features I'd spent far too much time contemplating. Cedric. Chapter 8. In my shock, the holly slipped from my arms. I attempted to recover it, covertly, but it was too late. I'd already made too much noise and alerted him to my presence. He shot to his feet, and I considered running, but knew I wouldn't get far in these skirts. In a moment he was before me, staring down in disbelief.
"Adelaide, what are you doing out here?"
"Me? What are you?"
"Never mind. I know what you're doing."
I backed up, swinging my small knife. "Stay away from me!"
"Put that down before you hurt someone."
There was a hard set to his face. Not angry, just resigned.
"It's not what you think."
The words were so ludicrous it drew me up short in my retreat.
"Oh? Are you saying you're not in the middle of a heretical midwinter ritual?"
He sighed.
"No. I'm saying the Alanzans aren't whatever bloodthirsty creatures you've been told we are." The use of "we" wasn't lost on me.
But you're saying you're one of them." He took a long time in answering. A chill wind blew, ruffling my hair and freezing my skin.
"Yes."
The world seemed to sway around me. Cedric Thorne had just admitted to being a heretic. He reached toward me.
"I mean it. Will you please put that down?"
"Don't touch me," I said, brandishing the knife higher. Behind him, the lanterns glowed with a sinister light, and I suddenly wondered if he was going to attempt some Alanzan curse on me. I'd heard plenty about them, but never expected to be the victim of one. But then, I'd never really been in this situation before with someone I thought I knew. I wondered if anyone in the house would hear me if I screamed.
"Do not scream," said Cedric, anticipating me. "I swear there's nothing to be afraid of. Everything's the same. I'm the same."
I shook my head and felt the knife tremble in my hand.
"That's not true. You believe in communing with demons."
"I believe the 6 wayward angels are every bit as holy as the 6 glorious ones. They aren't demons, and I believe divinity is all around us in the natural world, free to anyone," he said calmly. "Not something only accessible through the priests and their churches." It sounded less sinister when he put it like that, but I'd had too many warnings drilled into me.
"Adelaide, you know me.
I covered for you when you ran away. I got your old cook a job. Do you really think I'm some servant of darkness?
No, I said, lowering the knife at last. But you're confused. You need to stop this. Stop, being a heretic.
It's not something I can just stop being. It's part of me.
They could kill you if you're caught.
I know. Believe me, I'm well aware of that. And it's something I've long come to terms with. I shivered as another icy wind passed over us. He looked me over, his face turning incredulous.
Come on, let's talk somewhere warmer before you get hypothermia. Like the drawing room? I asked.
I'm sure your dangerous and illegal beliefs will make compelling conversation back at the party.
We're not going anywhere until I understand what's going on.
I'm fine, I put on a cloak.
Then why are you turning blue?
You can't see that well out here.
I can see that cloak is just meant to cover you going from a carriage to a party, not prancing around on the longest night of the year.
If you won't go inside, then go over there at least.
Off to the side of the clearing was a small lean-to, open on two sides, used to store tools and wood. I squeezed inside it and found it blocked some of the wind. Cedric joined me, and I started to cringe as he approached, still frightened by the memory of him, in the firelit diamond, living out the tales of horror I'd heard. To my surprise, he unbuttoned his scarlet greatcoat and pulled me toward him, enveloping me in the folds of the heavy fabric. The warmth it offered dampened my fear. I smelled the familiar cologne I liked so much, and could make out nearly every detail of his face in the moonlight now that we were closer. Out of necessity, I moved closer to the warmth he offered, and realized what he'd said was true. It was just him, the same Cedric I'd known for nearly a year. And that made the situation even more terrifying.
They could kill you, I repeated, the full weight of that hitting me.
The Osfridian ecclesiastical court sometimes offered soft sentences to women or foreigners caught practicing the Alanzan faith. Imprisonment, fines. But an Osfridian citizen? A man? That could and often did result in execution. The priests were getting zealous about keeping Osfrid pure, and the king was uneasy about a religion that advocated every member having a voice instead of one all-powerful leader.
And that's why you need to go to Adoria, I suddenly realized, speaking my thoughts aloud.
It's why you fought for all of this with your father, and put your classes on hold, isn't it? So you can practice safely in Cape Triumph. Although the Osfridian colonies still fell under the Crown's law, a number of them had charters allowing for certain exceptions and liberties. Religion was one that came up a lot. Shipping heretics across the sea was easier than trying to stamp them out in the motherland, so long as it resulted in taxes and trade goods being sent back.
It's not legal in Cape Triumph, he said. No colonies sanction Alanzan worship.
Not yet. I tilted my head, having to do some complicated maneuvering to look him in the eye while still staying in the protection of his greatcoat. I understood now why these coats were so popular in the rugged conditions of Adoria.
Is there going to be one? I asked.
Well, not strictly Alanzan, but there's a charter being drawn up for a colony called Westhaven that would allow freedom of religion to all who live there. Us, the errant priests, and the heirs of Euros. Those who haven't already gone north, at least.
So you can go there and be safe, I said, surprised to feel relief on his part.
It's in the very early stages. Some of that earlier melancholy underscored his words. The boundaries and laws are still being established. It's not open to all settlers yet. Only those who buy a stake in the company's initial charter. It's a great opportunity to be one of the early investors. Lots of potential for leadership and immediate safety if you can get that membership. But it's not cheap.
And that's why you procured, isn't it? I asked.
It wasn't enough to simply get passage to Adoria on family business. You needed money of your own.
Yes. But I'm going to come up short.
I winced.
Because you recruited a Sirminican and an impostor who are going to get you mediocre commissions.
You're only an impostor when it comes to sowing and bleaching vegetables.
I smacked his chest, too annoyed to wonder how he'd heard about the asparagus incident.
This is serious. You need to get out of Osfrid. You need to get to this safe place. If there is such a thing for someone
like you? I couldn't say for sure, but it seemed as though he flinched at someone like you. It's not just about safety. It's about freedom. Freedom to be who I am without putting on a show for everyone else. He gestured back at the diamond, without having to sneak around. His words echoed my own, spoken months ago when I begged him to keep my cover. I understood his longing for freedom, even if I didn't understand the motivation behind it. I'd fought hard to get on a path that would let me seize control of my life, and it had been with his help.
Well, you don't have that freedom yet, so why worship right on the Glittering Quartz grounds?
I didn't expect anyone to be out here, he said pointedly. If it had been up to me, I wouldn't have come to the manor at all today. I'd be off worshipping with others, instead of doing a solitary ritual. You're celebrating the end of exams, but for me, this is one of the holiest nights of the year. I had to come off a praise before your party started. It was hard for me to reconcile the brash Cedric I thought I knew with this one, who was so seriously discussing spiritual matters. Matters that sounded nonsensical to someone raised in the orthodox worship of the one god Euros, worship that took place inside solid churches with orderly services. When I looked away and didn't respond, Cedric remarked softly, "It's funny." I knew when this came out, others would look at me differently, reject me. I braced myself for it, but somehow I didn't expect it'd bother me so much that you think less of me. I glanced back up at him, taken in by the tone of his voice. What I saw in his face confused me, especially when he drew the greatcoat more tightly around us. I swallowed and moved to a somewhat safer topic. Is there some other way to get the money and get a stake in the colony? Can't you ask your father or uncle?
You know my father, Cedric scoffed. He has no idea I'm part of this. He'd probably turn me in himself.
I discovered the Alanzans when I started at the university a couple of years ago. And finally something just made sense for me in the world. It felt so right. But I knew better than to breathe a word of it to anyone, even my own kin. My uncle wouldn't help either. He just follows my father's lead. As for other funds, I could find some kind of work over there. But it would take a while to make the money needed for the colony, especially if I don't finish my degree here. I'd probably end up as a labourer, going when the colony opened to all settlers. But that won't happen right away. Anyone outside the initial charter members settling in the colony probably wouldn't get citizenship until next year.
Well, you can't stay here to finish your degree, I said firmly. Surely there must be other ways of quickly making money.
He chuckled. If they existed, would your family have been struggling?
I mean, yes, there are plenty of get-rich-quick schemes in the New World, and some of them work. But really, the Glittering Quartz one of the best. Moving any kind of luxury goods, even young women, can have big returns over there. They don't have access to the kinds of things we do here.
What kind of luxury goods? I asked, trying to ignore my increased shivering.
Spices, jewelry, china, glass. He paused to think.
My father makes a fortune on the side selling fabric. He brings it over with the girls, and it more than covers what gets spent on your wardrobes, which he then resells for more profit once you're all married. One-of-a-kind things are valuable, too. Antique furniture. Art. That pulled me in.
Art? What kind of art?
Any kind. There are no galleries over there, no great masters, and few people here go to the trouble of shipping their rare paintings or sculptures over the ocean to sell there. Too complicated. Too risky. But if they did, there's a huge profit to be made.
Damn it, I can hear your teeth. We need to go.
He started to lead me in the direction I'd come, but I pushed obstinately back, keeping us where we stood.
Then, if you could sell a painting, that'd go a long way in helping earn your fee.
He shook his head. If I could sell the right kind of painting to the right buyer, I could more than cover my stake in Westhaven.
Then you need to get a painting.
Valuable ones aren't exactly lying around. I mean, they are in my uncle's manors, but I won't steal from my own family.
You don't have to steal one, if you can make your own, I said excitedly.
I can't make any...
Not you.
Me.
Don't you remember that day in Osro? The poppy painting.
He fell silent. His eyes were dark in the dim lighting, surveying me thoughtfully.
I thought that was some kind of game.
It wasn't. Well, I mean, it was... It's hard to explain, but I can do it. I can replicate all sorts of famous paintings. Or if you don't want an exact duplicate, I can imitate an artist's style and claim we found some lost work. That Florencio hanging by the drawing room? I could do that easily, given enough time.
You want to sell a counterfeit painting in a Doria?
He asked in disbelief. Do you think they'd honestly know the difference? I challenged.
If we were caught...
Add it to the list of the other things we could get in trouble for.
It's becoming kind of a long list.
But that initial worry was giving way to a warmth and enthusiasm I knew. The Cedric I knew, the schemer and salesman. He looked down at me for long moments as the wind whistled around us.
Do you know what you're getting into by doing this?
No more than what you did when you protected me that night at the Osfro city gates. I told you I'd owe you a favor. I could feel the decision settle around him.
Okay, then. We'll do this. But first, we need to get inside.
We left the meager safety of the lean-to, both of us shivering. He doused the lanterns while I picked up my holly. Watching him, I felt that previous unease begin to stir within me as all the warnings from dour priests played through my mind. Then Cedric returned to me, his face alight and eager with a plan before us, and those warnings faded to background noise. He draped the greatcoat around me as best he could, as we walked back toward the manor, huddled together.
"How in the world," he remarked, already planning ahead, "are we going to even find a way for you to secretly paint this masterpiece?"
"You'll have to figure out those logistics," I said. "And I'll concentrate on finding a husband, so you can get that mediocre commission."
"Right. Wouldn't want to distract you from that. I'll figure something out."
The lights of the manor glowed before us in the night. And despite my earlier confidence, I couldn't help a bit of uncertainty. Not about the painting. I was still confident I could do that. But the logistics would be difficult. Getting the materials, let alone a place for me to do it, wouldn't be easy. Between that and the potential problems of even selling it in Adoria, Cedric's chances of getting the money he needed were not certain by any means. Just before we reached the back door, he stopped and met my eyes.
"I meant what I said. About the stories you've heard not being true.
Alansans are ordinary people. Normal people, with vocations and morals. We just have a different view on how the world works.
Cedric, I don't think less of you. I've always felt..."
I couldn't finish, and had a feeling I should have never begun. I turned away, but he caught my arm and pulled me toward him.
"Adelaide."
Words escaped him as well. And he released his hold on me.
"Okay, let's go."
We made it inside, earning surprised looks from Mistress Masterson, our other instructors, and the rest of the girls who'd been assembling for dinner. I knew my face was flushed and my hair windswept, but Cedric was quick to cover for me, like always.
"Adelaide couldn't rest unless she got her holly, so I offered to go out with her."
His smile was as easy as ever, in no way indicating he practiced a controversial religion that could get him executed. Mistress Masterson tisked at me.
"I admire your dedication, dear, but these aren't fit conditions to be out in. Thank you for looking after her, Master Cedric."
But who was going to look after him? The question plagued me throughout the rest of the evening. I went through the motions of dinner, games, and conversation, but always my eyes strayed to Cedric. He too was being sociable, but I could see he didn't go out of his way to engage others. Now that I understood what was happening, I could easily spot the worry weighing on him. Again, I wondered if my forged painting, if we could pull it off, would even be enough to save him.
"Where's your head tonight?"
Tamsin strolled over to me from across the drawing room. She wore a blue dress that looked striking with her reddish hair, though she was still quick to tell us green was her best color.
"I'm worried about my exams," I lied.
"Are you?"
she asked in surprise.
"You always seem to go through classes and studying as though it didn't make any difference to you."
"I guess the reality of it is catching up with me now." She studied my face closely.
"I suppose so.
Well, go sneak an extra glass of wine when Mistress Masterson's not looking. Or if you're really worried, retake them after you get your score."
"Retake them?" I'd suggested it to Mira, but had never even considered it for myself.
Sure, Tamsin said. I'm going to. I mean, I think I did pretty good, but why not make sure? I can't leave anything up to chance.
Her words hit me like a slap in the face. I stared at her for several long moments, and then turned my gaze back to the crowded drawing room. Cedric stood near the fire, talking to a wildly gesticulating Mr. Bricker, whom I suspected had had multiple glasses of wine. As though sensing me, Cedric glanced up and gave me a small smile, before returning to the conversation.
"Adelaide, are you okay?"
Tamsin asked. I glanced back at her.
"Yeah, yeah.
It's just something hit me I hadn't thought of before."
"What?"
she asked. "It's not important," I mustered a cheerful expression.
"Tell me how you think everyone here will rank."
It was a topic she was more than happy to expound on, seeing as she'd spent a lot of time analyzing our housemates. As she launched into an explanation, I nodded and smiled appropriately, all the while making plans for what I had to do next. Cedric needed money to get to Westhaven and stay alive. Could my forged painting do it? Yes, if everything fell into place. And if everything didn't fall into place? Then he needed a backup plan. I'd pondered this all evening, feeling useless. I had no power to give him money. But I realized now that I did have that power. Could I guarantee he'd be able to pay the entire fee for his stake in Westhaven? No. But I could guarantee he'd have a good start. And the only way to do that was to make sure he did not, in fact, get a mediocre commission for me. Chapter 9. Cedric left the morning after midwinter, and the exam results were in a few days later. They arrived with Jasper and Miss Garrison, one of the glittering court's dressmakers. She immediately wanted to start designing our themed wardrobes. Mistress Masterson strode in sedately to the library, where we all waited anxiously in neat, orderly rows. She propped up the framed list on the mantel and then stepped back. There was a moment of hesitation, and then we broke rank to crowd forward and look. The list showed the scores for all girls across the four manors. I immediately found my name, exactly in the middle, as I'd once hoped. It was a fine score, and scores only helped in the Glittering Court's promotion in Andoria. A prosperous man, entranced by a girl's looks, might not care how she ranked in the exams, but those with the highest scores would have more opportunities to meet said gentleman. Mira, standing beside me, let out a small exclamation of delight. I found her name several above mine in a very respectable seventh across all manners, and one spot higher than Clara.
"Can you believe it?"
Mira asked. "Maybe I won't have to clean floors after all." Around us the room was buzzing with other girls' chatter. I hugged her. "Of course I can believe it. You've been so worried about the accent, but you've worked so hard in all the other—" The wail of a familiar voice drew me up short. I immediately spied Tamsin standing on the opposite side of the group, her eyes wide. She turned to Mistress Masterson incredulously.
"How am I ranked third? The girls above me have the same score as me."
A quick study of the list showed two girls from other manors in the first and second spots.
"Yes," Mistress Masterson agreed. "You all tied. It was very impressive. Really what it came down to is aesthetics."
She nodded toward Miss Garrison.
"Winifred, the first girl, would look so lovely in the diamond colouring. Ruby is the next most precious stone, and that obviously wouldn't suit you with your hair. So third, as a sapphire, seemed like—"
"Sapphire?" interrupted Tamsin. "Sapphire? Everyone knows green is my best colour. Isn't an emerald rarer than a sapphire?"
"My green fabric hasn't arrived yet," said Miss Garrison. "Isn't likely to show until about a week before you sail."
Mistress Masterson nodded.
"And the categories are flexible. It's more of a gemstone range we're going for. We thought it best just to go forward with sapphire, so that she could start on your wardrobe. Otherwise she'd be working at the last minute."
Tamsin fixed the seamstress with a sharp eye.
"Well, maybe she could just sew a little damn faster."
"Tamsin!" snapped Mistress Masterson, shifting back to the stern instructor we knew. "You are out of line. You will take sapphire, and be grateful that you are among the top three. And you will watch your language."
I could tell Tamsin was still upset, but she took a deep breath and visibly calmed before speaking again.
Yes, Mistress Masterson. I apologize. But I can retake the exams I did poorly on, right?
Yes, of course. Every girl can. Though, I'll be honest, with a 99% rating, there isn't much else to achieve.
Perfection, replied Tamsin. Most of the girls were content with their scores. Even the lowest ranked would still be dazzlingly displayed in Adoria, and enduring exams again wasn't so appealing. Miss Garrison and her assistant set about measuring everyone, and holding fabric swatches to them as other gemstone themes were decided. I approached Mistress Masterson and asked if I could retake the exams.
Certainly,
she said, looking surprised. As mediocre as I'd always been, this initiative had to be unexpected. She rifled through some papers and produced one that broke down my scores, detailing each area.
Which would you like to retake?
I barely glanced at the sheet. All of them.
All?
She repeated.
That almost never happens.
I shrugged by way of answer. She pointed to a couple of scores.
You performed very well in these areas. I doubt there's any need.
I'd still like to do it. She hesitated and gave a curt nod.
It'll take a bit of scheduling for you to meet with all the instructors, but it's every girl's right. Between you and me, in all the time I've done this, most girls who retake an exam only go up a few points. Miss Garrison and I currently have you placed as an amethyst, and her purple fabrics are gorgeous. It's unlikely your score would shift enough to warrant a new theme. And would you really want one?
I want to retake them, I reiterated.
Very well. But in the meantime, we'll still have you fitted, so Miss Garrison can start on the amethyst wardrobe.
She was right about the fabrics. Of all the ones Miss Garrison had brought, the amethyst ones were among the most beautiful. She held up swathes of lavender silk and purple velvet, clucking in approval each time. But an amethyst girl wouldn't give Cedric the commission he needed.
You've got the colouring to pull off anything, she remarked. For some of the other girls, the originally planned palettes aren't going to work.
Mira was one such case. They decided her theme would be topaz, but after having her try some of the fabrics, it was clear the yellow-brown fabrics just didn't suit her.
Deep reds are the way to go,
Miss Garrison told Mistress Masterson. The dressmaker's gaze fell on Clara.
We could switch them. Give Mira garnet.
Jasper, observing the conversation, nodded in agreement.
It's a little more of a common stone, so it might be fitting.
I didn't have a chance to be affronted by the insult to my friend, because Clara's scowl told me how much the change upset her. That made up for a lot. Afterward, I heard her mutter to Caroline,
I hate yellow. It always makes me look sickly.
Tamsin was one of the last to complete her fittings, largely because she kept pointing out how unacceptable the blue fabric was. When she finally finished and walked up to our room with us, she muttered,
I can't wait until the retakes put me at the top. Then they'll see what a bad choice they made. I'd look just as good in white as green.
I stumbled on the stairs and had to catch the railing for support. In my plan to retake the exams, I somehow hadn't considered Tamsin. If I managed to vault myself to the top of the list, where would that put her? Her words rang in my ears.
You don't know what I have on the line.
No, I didn't. But I knew what Cedric had on the line. His life. No matter how dire, could Tamsin really have anything comparable to that? And was it really dire? Her feelings had seemed genuine the day of the family visit. But I'd seen a lot of theatrics from her in our time together. Was her fixation to be the best just a matter of pride? A yearning for riches? I had to choose between them. My best friend, or who? The man who'd helped save me. No matter where Tamsin placed, she'd have a prosperous future in Adoria. My placement could affect Cedric's life. There was only one choice I could make. Content with her scores and theme, Mira was able to relax in the days that followed, spending a lot of time engrossed in her beloved tome of adventures. Tamsin and I, however, endured the stress of retaking our exams, as our various instructors scheduled time throughout the week among all the manors. Like Mistress Masterson, Tamsin was baffled that I'd retake all of them.
"Why would you do that?"
she asked on our way to the dance exam.
"You think things will change?
And why would you want them to? Your clothes look great on you, not like some of us."
I had to look away, still feeling guilty in spite of my resolve. I just need to see what I can do. Miss Hayworth met with us and Caroline, the only other girl retaking the dance exam, in the ballroom.
Same format as before. We'll go through every single dance and see if you've improved.
Tamsin had marginally improved in the step that continually gave her trouble. For some reason, the beat stripped her up. Caroline hadn't improved at all. In fact, she did worse. But luckily, Mistress Masterson would only count the highest of her two scores. And me? Well, I was something else altogether. It was hard to say who among the three of them was the most astonished. I executed every dance perfectly, on both technical and artistic levels. And it was a relief to finally let my true self show through. I'd spent most of the last year hiding what I could do with the facade I'd created. Now all the years of instruction and formal parties came back to me, and I actually enjoyed myself. The other exams had similar results. As before, the written ones allowed me to conceal my answers from my housemates, but in the public tests, all my new skills were on display for my peers. Since no other girl was retaking every single exam, no one else really got a full sense of how well I did in each subject. That all changed when the results came in the following week. There was no posted list this time, simply a meeting called by Mistress Masterson in the drawing room. We lined up in our rows. Jasper Thorne was with her again, and both of them wore expressions that weren't grave so much as perplexed. Just as she was about to speak, Cedric came hurrying in. I'd neither seen nor heard from him in the last couple of weeks, leaving me to wonder what his plans were for our painting project. I saw him murmur what looked like an apology as he took his place beside his father. Jasper said nothing, maintaining that pleasant cover he always had in public with his son. Mistress Masterson nodded a greeting to him, and then turned to address us.
"I know some of you have been waiting for your retake results, so you'll be pleased therein. Most of you showed improvement, for which I'm particularly proud, but there was nothing significant enough to warrant a change in rank or theme." She paused. "With one exception."
Beside me, Tamsin straightened up, lifting her chin proudly. I could feel her trembling with excitement as she awaited the news that she'd trumped the two girls who'd beat her on the list.
"Adelaide,"
said Mistress Masterson, her gaze falling heavily on me.
"The improvement you showed is remarkable, to put it mildly. I've never, ever seen a girl make such a leap in scores, and I've never seen a girl get a perfect overall score."
She let those words sink in, and I felt the eyes of everyone in the room upon me. Tamsin's were widest of all.
"We rarely have theme changes based on retakes, though of course it happens, and in this case, it's absolutely warranted."
Jasper stepped forward, taking the lead from her. He was as ostensibly cheerful as ever, but somehow I didn't think he was overly thrilled about the turn of events.
"Adelaide, my dear, you've replaced Winifred from Dunford Manor as our diamond. Everyone else who scored above your last result will move down a notch. All girls will still keep their gemstone themes, with a few exceptions."
"As Master Thorne said, you'll have diamond,"
Mistress Masterson explained. "You and Winifred are of similar size, and Miss Garrison should have little difficulty fitting you into her clothes. Since her score was so high, it'd hardly seem fair to assign her a semi-precious stone like the amethyst. We think she'll show best as a sapphire, and we've done a couple of other last-minute switches, which means, Tamsin, you can be an emerald after all. Miss Garrison expects the green fabric to arrive next week, and she and her assistants will work around the clock to make sure you're properly outfitted."
Tamsin still looked dumbstruck, like Mistress Masterson was speaking a different language.
"But if the ranks shifted, then that means I'm fourth."
"Yes."
It was a rare moment of Tamsin being stunned into silence, and I felt a lump in my throat.
Jasper, seeing her dismay, gave her a stiff smile. "You'll dazzle them as an emerald. Even if you aren't invited to all the elite parties, I know you'll be in high demand. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of all my girls, though it looks like my son managed to find the top jewel this season."
Jasper didn't sound particularly proud of that. The top three had previously been all his acquisitions. With the sudden dramatic turn of events, I'd nearly forgotten Cedric was here. I looked at him now, and saw that he was quite possibly the most shocked person in the room. He couldn't even fake a smile. Jasper gave a few more encouraging words for the whole group, telling us how excited he was to take us to Adoria next week. He had significant trade to do and had chartered 2 ships for the journey. We'd be travelling with the girls from Guthshire Manor. Swan Ridge and Dunford would be in the other ship. When we were dismissed, a flurry of excitement broke out, and I was immediately swarmed by girls wanting to know how I'd achieved such a feat. It was a relief when Mistress Masterson pulled me away to discuss a few logistics. "It really is remarkable," she told me in the privacy of the study. "Master Jasper wondered if there might be some deceit involved, but I told him that if you'd found a way to cheat in playing the harp or dancing the Lorandian two-step, then that itself deserved some sort of reward. Remarkable!" I swallowed. I guess I just learned more than I realized. A lot of lessons from when I was a lady's maid came back to me.
"Well, we'll all work hard to get these initial bumps fixed. I think it should come together fairly easily. The diamond attire is all white and silver, which will look nice on you as well. You'll have to set aside some extra time for Miss Garrison to alter the clothes for you this week."
"It's no problem," I said, still stunned at just how well my plan had worked. "Let me know what you need from me." Cedric appeared in the doorway, his earlier shock now covered by a jovial grin.
"Mistress Masterson, do you mind if I borrow Adelaide when you're done? I know this change must be a little daunting. I just wanted to give her some encouragement."
Mistress Masterson beamed.
"Yes, of course. We're all set."
Winter still held its grip, but the sun had come out enough to make the day pleasant. Cedric suggested we go for a walk to enjoy the weather, but I suspected he just wanted to ensure we weren't overheard. I felt small relief that he led us to a grove of hawthorn, rather than the old forest where he'd held the midwinter ritual.
"What?" he demanded. "Have you done? Are you completely out of your mind?"
"I've saved you. That's what I've done."
I'd expected surprise, but was a little taken aback by his vehemence. He raked a hand through his hair, messing up where it had been neatly tied in the back.
"You weren't supposed to attract attention. I told you that on the first day. Didn't you hear, Mistress Masterson? No one does this. No one makes a score change that vast. No one gets a perfect score. No one. Do you think everyone's just going to marvel about this?" he continued, pacing around. "Do you think they'll all just chuckle and shake their heads? Someone's going to ask questions. Someone's going to wonder how a lady's maid from a countess's house performed so perfectly after months of average behaviour. Someone's going to make the connection that maybe that maid isn't actually a maid."
I strode up to him, hands on my hips.
"So what if they do? Better I'm caught as a runaway noble than you outed as a heretic. Besides, in a couple of weeks we'll be on our way to Adoria. None of this will matter."
"Don't be so sure," he said darkly. "These kinds of things can follow you anywhere.
What's the worst that can happen? They haul me back to Grandmama? I'd rather that than you on the Osfro gallows."
"You don't think they'd hang me for kidnapping a peeress of the realm?" he asked, leaning toward me.
"No. I'd make sure you were innocent of any involvement. I'd take the full blame. But it's not going to happen. Even if someone follows us to Adoria, I'll be married before they can lay claim to me. And that," I added proudly, "is the whole point of this. These scores are just the beginning. Wait until I'm there. I'll dazzle them all. There'll be a bidding war. I'll have men eating out of my hand."
"I don't doubt it," he grumbled.
"Don't make fun of me," I returned. "Because of what I've done, you'll get the biggest commission of the season. You can even have some of my surety money. Maybe it won't cover your whole stake in Westhaven, but it'll certainly make things easier, if the painting scheme falls through."
He looked me over and declared, "Nothing involving you has ever been easy." I balled my fists at my sides.
"The words you're looking for are, 'Thank you, Adelaide, for going to all this trouble to help me out.'"
"The risk is too great," he shook his head. "You shouldn't be doing this."
And as I spoke, I realized he wasn't talking about the risk to himself. He wasn't really concerned about being implicated in my disappearance. It was exposing me as a fraud and taking me away that he wanted to prevent.
"Why shouldn't I?" I said. "After what you did for me?"
"You saved me, Cedric,"
I was drowning back there in Osro. Of course I should do this. I'll do more if that's what it takes to keep you alive in spite of yourself. He'd been regarding me very intently as I spoke, as though he couldn't quite believe my words. At that last bit, his face broke into a smile, finally easing the tension. In spite of myself?
Well, you're the one who chose to complicate your life with heresy.
You don't choose it. It chooses you. If you say so, I said. I kept my tone light and dismissive, but inside I was relieved to no longer be fighting with him. How did it choose you, anyway? Don't take this the wrong way, but you don't really seem like the type who'd think too much about godly affairs. He beckoned me toward the house, and I fell in step with him. A lot of things bothered me about the world, ever since childhood. My parents are married, but they might as well not be. They've almost always lived apart, and we were all supposed to pretend that was normal. Emotional reactions weren't allowed about that, or, well, anything. It was all duty, and keeping up appearances, just like the traditional churches teach. Then I learned how the six wayward angels aren't evil. They just govern emotion and instinct, something the rigid priests of Euros fear. I learned it was okay to embrace that emotional side of me, to accept my true nature, that it was okay to let my passions run wild. The idea of Cedric and passions running wild was enough to make me momentarily lose track of his ardent explanation. And the rest of the Alanzan worship just made sense too, he continued. Spirituality without boundaries, all voices heard, reverence for the natural world. We don't need to attend lavish services paid for with prayer fees and massive tithes, while beggars and others starve outside the cathedrals. It's not fair for one group to have so much wealth and another so little. I've seen your wardrobe choices. You're no ascetic. And here you are, ironically doing business with men who are massively wealthy in the New World. But there's a difference between building wealth through honest business and building it by taking it from those who look to you for hope and spiritual guidance. Don't you see, Adelaide? The Orthodox priests are preaching goodwill toward all men, but actually hoarding... No, I held up my hand. Stop now. I can see where you're going with this. I'll keep your secrets, but do not try to convert me to your pagan ways. He laughed. Wouldn't dream of it. But it's nice to know you draw the line somewhere. The house grew closer and closer, and the momentary lightness faded. I really am sorry if I made things more complicated, I said softly. This was already complicated. Just be careful. No one's safe until you've got some wealthy Adorian's ring on your finger. It'll be weighted with a diamond, I told him, earning a return of the smile. Inside I was relieved to see that most of the other girls had gone on to their rooms or other tasks, freeing me from a deluge of questions. Or so I thought. When I got to my room, I found Tamsin and Mira. It was clear they'd been waiting for my return. Tamsin leapt to her feet. "What have you done?" she cried, echoing Cedric. "I'm, not sure what you mean." "The hell you don't!" It was a lapse into her former dialect that would have scandalized Mistress Masterson. Has this all been some kind of joke? Coast along and then swoop in at the end to crush everyone else? I remembered Cedric's accusations when I first came here, that I'd treated impersonating Ada as a joke too. Was that how my actions would always be perceived by people? Would I never be taken seriously? How did you do that? Continued Tamsin. How did you score perfectly on everything? I learned a lot of it when I worked in my lady's house. I was around nobility all the time, and I guess I picked up their ways. You know that. Tamsin wasn't buying it. Oh, yeah? Where were those ways in the last 9 months? You botch things continuously, but not always the same things. You run hot and cold, perfect at some things, and then failing at the most basic ones. What kind of game are you playing? It's no game, I said. My nerves just got the best of me. Things finally came together during the retakes. Impossible, she stated. I don't understand how or why you've been doing this, but I know something's going on, and if you think you can just ruin my life and... Oh, come on, I interrupted, switching from defense to offense. Your life is far from ruined.
Fury filled her features.
That's not true! I had it! I was in the top three! And then you came along and pulled that out from under me. You knew how important it was to me, but still went ahead and destroyed everything I've worked for.
I threw up my hands.
Tamsin, enough! I've gone along with your theatrics for 9 months, but this is going too far. Exactly what in your life has been destroyed? You can converse about current politics, eat a 7-course meal and play the piano. Maybe you'll miss out on a few parties, but you're still going to marry some rich, prestigious man in the New World. You've come a long way from being a laundress's daughter, and if you were my friend, you'd be happy at how far I've come too.
That's the thing, she said. I can't tell how far you've come. I've lived with you all these months, but don't know anything about you. The only thing I'm sure of is that you've been lying to us all, and this triumph of yours just proves it.
There was a jumble of emotions in my chest. Anger, sadness, frustration. I hated the lies and subterfuge. I wanted to tell Tamsin and Mira about everything. My title, Lionel, Ada, Cedric, Westhaven. Those secrets burned within me, needing to get out. But I couldn't let them. The consequences were too great, and so I had to bury them back within me, and let that terrible animosity hang in the air.
Tamsin, said Mira, speaking up at last, that's not fair. What's wrong with her wanting to do well? It's what we all want. And she told you, nerves always got the best of her.
That's the biggest lie of all. She's been fearless from the first day, facing down Clara, and traipsing out in the night for Holly. The jokes, the carefree air. It's all been a cover.
She pointed an accusing finger at me.
Nerves aren't your problem. I refuse to be sucked into your web of lies, and I will never have anything to do with you again.
That drew even diplomatic Mira to her feet.
Isn't that a little extreme?
You're being irrational.
And you're acting like a child, I added.
The stress of today's events was catching up with me. Between the shocking announcement, Cedric, and now this, I was having a hard time remaining calm. Tamsin turned on Mira, ignoring me.
I'm refusing to let her manipulate me like she has everyone else. And if you know what's good for you, you'll do the same.
Tamsin, pleaded Mira, please stop and talk this out.
No.
Tamsin moved toward the door and paused to fix me with a stony glare.
I'm never speaking to you again.
My control snapped.
Should be easy enough, seeing as we'll be hanging out in different social circles in Adoria.
She took it like a physical blow, but held good to her threat. She didn't say a word to me, and the only response I got was the slamming of the door as my first real friend stormed away from me.
Chapter 10.
I honestly didn't believe her. After months of wild emotions and dramatics, I figured Tamsin would calm down and make amends. But she never did. The next couple of weeks were a whirlwind of activity. Fittings continued at an accelerated pace as the seamstresses worked around the clock to finish up everyone's wardrobes. It was a daunting task for our house alone, and I knew it had to be just as busy in the three other manors. Tamsin's green fabric arrived, and I caught sight of her at one of her fittings. She looked stunning in it, and I told her so, but she acted as though I hadn't spoken. My clothes were equally beautiful. I'd loved the purple attire, but this new set transcended even that. Some of the dresses, particularly the daytime ones, were of purest white, made of delicate fabrics that rivaled those I'd worn in my former life. The evening and ball gowns were radiant confections of velvet and satin, done in gleaming white and glittering silver, embellished with jewels and metallic lace. The Adorian styles took a little getting used to. Although the long skirts were full and layered with petticoats like ours, there was no extra bustle to pad the hips. I didn't mind that so much. It made them infinitely more maneuverable. Adorian sleeves were close-fitting to the elbow, with a spill of lace or other embellishment at the cuffs, rather than a chemise revealed through slashing up the arms. It was the bodices, however, that gave me the most pause. They were significantly lower cut than Osfridian fashion, with a scoop neckline that could reveal a lot with a particularly ambitious corset.
"It's how they do it there,"
Miss Garrison said when I'd remarked upon it.
"It's a new world, so they claim. A bolder world. They're trying not to be held back by our stuffy ways here.
Her tone suggested she didn't entirely approve, even if creating such things was part of her job.
Well, at least it's done where you're going, in Cape Triumph, up in the northern...